But doesn't that what the bill does?
I don't know.
House Judiciary Committee order today is
kind of trying to regulate in some way.
2015. First item on the agenda is a public hearing on Senate Bill 601A.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 601 is an update to the Oregon Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act. This act was created in 2007, and today's update expands the definition of personal information to include new sources of information that weren't known in 2007, such as your phone capturing your fingerprint. It also requires a person who suffers a data breach of personal information of another to notify the Attorney General when the breach affects more than 250 consumers. It also makes violation of the act actionable by the Attorney General under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act.
Okay. Ms. Attorney General, Cheryl Hemstra, and David Rosenfeld, I think.
There we go.
Good afternoon. Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Ellen Rosenblum. I'm the Attorney General for Oregon and come to you in support of Senate Bill 601. In 2014, there were at least 783 major data breaches nationally, resulting in the loss of more than 85 million records. The Wall Street Journal estimates that there is a new victim of identity fraud every 2 seconds. The answer to the question, who will be the victim of a data breach, is unfortunately simple. All of us, everyone. Data breaches are an increasingly common menace to grocery stores, hospitals, schools, state agencies, online vendors, really any organization with valuable personal information. This week, the FBI reported they have seen a huge uptick in data breaches in the last few years. The FBI used to see major breaches every 2 to 3 weeks, but they're now seeing comparable breaches every 2 to 3 days. So it is against this backdrop that I set out to review the adequacy of our data breach law, the Oregon Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act, which was passed way back in 2007. My office has spent the last year making a top-to-bottom review of this statutory framework, and I come to you today with a few recommendations. The Oregon Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act has two primary functions. First, it says that if personal information has been stolen via a data breach, that the breached company must give timely notice to those affected. This helps consumers to take proactive steps to be on guard against identity theft. Secondly, the law requires those who keep personal information to maintain reasonable security measures to protect it. Like most data breach statutes of its vintage, Oregon's is mostly concerned with financial information, credit cards, social security numbers, bank accounts, and the like. Nearly a decade later, we find that both the targets and the consequences of data breach are far more extensive than they used to be. The most significant personal information not protected under Oregon data breach law is medical information. According to the World Privacy Forum, medical identity theft typically leaves a trail of falsified information in medical records that can plague victims' medical and financial lives for years. This month, Poneman released their fifth annual study on privacy and security of healthcare data. It found that medical identity theft has nearly doubled in the last 5 years, and victims spend an average of $13,500 to restore their credit, reimburse their healthcare provider for fraudulent claims, and correct inaccuracies in their health records. HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, provides instruction to traditional medical providers as to what procedures should be followed to protect against data breach. But this protection only goes so far. Not usually covered by HIPAA, life insurance carriers, schools, state agencies, law enforcement, local government, and the increasingly massive array of apps, websites, and other third-party providers who've sprung up to help consumers manage their medical data. So after extensive review, I make the following recommendations. First, I propose that Oregon insert medical, health insurance, and biometric information under the protection of our data breach laws. I've consulted with the tech industry, insurance carriers, retailers, and other partners in the private sector as to how to best craft these definitions in a way that strikes the appropriate balance between the consumer data protection and the avoidance of additional expense and inconvenience for our businesses. I would like to thank our partners in the private sector for assisting us in crafting every one of these definitions and in providing their advice and insight throughout the drafting process. A brief word about biometric data. I'm occasionally asked what biometric data is or what I would want it or why I would want it to be included, and frankly, I had to find out what biometric data was myself first and learned that it is any data about your physical attributes, like your facial features, your retina, or your fingerprints, as was mentioned. More and more biometric information has the potential to be stolen. Many of us now use our fingerprints to unlock our phones. I happen not to be one of those, but I know perhaps some in this room are. This means that your fingerprint information could become the subject of a breach. In December of 2014, a group called the Chaos Computer Club succeeded in recreating the fingerprint of a German defense minister using nothing but readily available technology and high-definition photos. So the vulnerability clearly exists. And unlike the password to your bank account, you can't change your biometric information. It follows you everywhere. I worry about what could happen if we fail to take steps to protect this information now. In my overview of the data breach statute, I was greatly surprised to learn that there have been no enforcement actions regarding digital records in the 8 years since the statute was passed. The current statute gives enforcement power to the Department of Consumer and Business Services. In 43 of the other 47 states with some form of statutory data breach protection, jurisdiction rests with the Attorney General. This, in turn, allows most national-scale data breaches to be dealt with at the national level, where there's a special working group dealing with data breach. Without Attorney General enforcement, we are often on the outside looking in at the Oregon Department of Justice. Oregon cannot take the lead on multi-state investigations, and DCBS does not have the authority to work within the multi-state Department of Justice AG group. So my second request is that enforcement authority be extended to the Attorney General to allow Oregon to sit as a full partner in the national discussions around data breach, and if need be, to engage in joint enforcement with other states as well. Finally, I would ask that the state of Oregon require that notice be given to the Attorney General if a breach occurs impacting more than 250 Oregonians. Many states already require notice of this kind, and it does make a lot of sense. When a breach happens, it's important that impacted consumers know about it. That's already the law, but what's missing is any requirement that state government be alerted. Without notice, we're going to struggle to spot trends in data breach, weaknesses in our own laws, and to help consumers distinguish between an authentic breach notice versus a fraudster fishing for their personal information. Fake data breach notices are an unfortunately popular scam out there. And I would submit that if we never learn about data breaches in a coordinated way, you as legislators won't know either. So the three changes I'm requesting are common sense, they're necessary, and they're all consistent with national trends. Nothing that I am suggesting here today is novel, and indeed it was not my goal, and it is not to reinvent the wheel. Senate Bill 601 is about keeping our data breach statute modern, useful, and maximally protective of the privacy and data of all Oregonians. Thank you for your time.
Chair Barker, my name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm an Assistant Attorney General at the Oregon Department of Justice, and happy to answer any questions.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Rosenfeld, Executive Director of OSPIRC, the Consumer Group. The only thing I will add to what the Attorney General has already laid out is to keep in mind, of course, no law can ever really solve any problem per se in its entirety, and in the case of privacy and data breaches, we know that the most scary part about that is what we don't know, is how technology and those who would do harm are going to invent new ways of breaching our privacy. And so one of the most important things we can do is set the law up to allow us to track and monitor and deal with problems as they come up, even new problems. And one of the best parts of the proposal that you have before you is that it gives the Attorney General, who is the best set up in our state, to be able to track and monitor and take action, the authority and power that she needs and or he in the future to be able to deal with things that we don't know are happening right now but might happen 5-10 years in the future. And this provides us with that kind of flexibility and power to be able to protect Oregonians. So it's we fully support Senate Bill 601.
Questions for Representative Greenlee.
No, I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. Is, folks know I've been working and finally succeeded after about 6 years to get the CEOs of healthcare organizations responsible for looking at their data systems on an annual basis and reporting to us and to their boards. But what I fear is, and I think we need to really begin to deal with it, is that this is already, the technology has already beaten us on this one, and that we need to be providing support and encouragement to begin to encrypt, particularly medical data, because as long as that data is not encrypted, we know it's completely vulnerable. There were, I think, 100 million patient records breached in the last year and a half or something. I mean, it's really, on the healthcare side, it's a real problem. So in addition to having some authority, we need to begin to move towards the next generation of how we keep digital data. It's just too completely vulnerable now. Probably any 20-year-old computer scientist at a university can get in any medical data they want. It's really a big, big problem. So I really welcome giving you some authority to try and help in this, but we need to get to the next generation as fast as we can. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. It'll be too late then, but we got to try.
Yep.
Any further questions? Thank you very much, panel. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Barker. And my apologies, Vice Chair Olson. I'm sorry that I didn't recognize you at the outset. I was looking over that way, and I suddenly realized there are two vice chairs to this committee.
That's okay. I was about ready to start crying. So.
I know. Well, I always appreciate the opportunity to appear before this committee. Thank you so much.
Close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 601A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 601A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves Senate Bill 601A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Greenlee, would you like to carry that?
I'd like to carry it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 919.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 919 comes to this committee from Senator Johnson. It has no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact. It passed the Senate with a 30-0 vote. This amends Oregon's disorderly conduct statutes. Currently, it's a Class B misdemeanor if you initiate a false report about a fire or an emergency. If the location of that false report is a school, it gets elevated to disorderly conduct in the first degree. This bill would add all public buildings, including courthouses.
The only reason I'm laughing, nobody signed up.
Yeah, I forecasted that about 10 minutes before the hearing. but this does add those two locations where it would become the elevated offense of disorderly conduct in the first degree.
Is that a misdemeanor?
The first offense is a Class A misdemeanor. If there's a subsequent offense, it's a C felony.
Mr. Chair, not to make things more complicated, I noticed this relating clause. We discussed earlier in the session maybe doing something about the increasing issue of swatting, which, have you guys heard about this? And I thought there was a bill on that, and it seems to have not made it. Would this be an appropriate venue? Take a look at that issue. Okay.
Relating to disorderly conduct, I have to say I don't know what swatting is.
Aha! Well, you know, it's a... So it is, apparently it started with the gaming community. It's where you make a false report of a hostage situation, and then the SWAT team comes descending on your house or something, which is apparently a thing. And it happened in Southwest Portland, and a guy came home... I received an email from with the baby, and it was, and the SWAT team had cordoned off his house. It's a anyway, it's
wouldn't
an issue.
Wouldn't that be covered in this?
This sounds bill, like as it seems covered. To me, just this bill seems to apply only to court, i.e., the public venue, the elevation. I assume swatting is illegal, but again, this is something. It doesn't have to be now. It could be
a false
the session.
Police report. Yeah, I think it would be already covered.
I assume it is illegal, but it's clearly the deterrence is not working out. I think we need to take a look at that. Can be in the interim. It could be.
Yeah. If we suggestion, because that is something that those are kind of things that aren't fine.
Well, I definitely heard from one guy who would love to testify about it.
can certainly end up in that if somebody getting hurt. We don't even have SWAT teams in my counties.
You don't have anybody.
No. Old retired game ward.
You are the SWAT team.
Kick a man while he's down, boy.
Cree Green.
And you guys are brothers.
Any questions at all about that? I'll close the public hearing, and I'll go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 919.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 919 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 919 to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so order. Representative Barton, would you like to carry that? And you could mention at the time that we should look forward to.
That's what I get. All right.
Very good suggestion. I mean, that is something that's something new and but could be a real problem. Any further business, committee?
Well, what do you think if before
there's a hostage
let this moment escape us here this week that we get a photo? We need to really do that.
Springer's not here.
Yeah. You know, she should be back tomorrow.
That word could have been put in here when they talked about things as hostage. Yeah. You still probably right. Well,
Yeah, it wouldn't be right now.
The funny issue.
Now wait for him. Hey, we'll adjourn. Thank you, committee.
And the funny thing about this was.
Thank you, committee.
And the funny thing about this was.
We'll adjourn.